Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining me today is Dan Cantor, Executive Director of the Working Families Party, which bills itself as New York's progressive third party. Before joining the Working Families Party, Cantor was a community and union organizer in cities around the country. Dan Cantor, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's start. What's the state of politics in New York? What's your overall assessment?
Well, from my point of view, there are some good things and some bad things. The real problem for people like me is the Senate Republicans still exercise too much of a veto power on what we take to be very sensible, common-sense, progressive legislation, whether it's public financing of elections or minimum wage or things like that. So it's a constant struggle with them. The governor has had a successful year and a half dominating things. I think in general we'd like to see a stronger legislature. We like the checks and balances in the American system, and so in general we favor an energized legislative branch as a way to get people's ideas into play. So, you know, we all live in swimming in the same water here. There are some things that are good in the country. There's a lot of things that really give you pause, and we're not just New Yorkers, we're Americans, and things are not going so well. Overall, unemployment's still high, several wars still going on. Nevertheless, we keep at it.
Now, Dan Cantor, you, of course, have the backing of some of the major labor unions in the state. They're furious. They have, in fact, withdrawn support from some candidates. They've said, we're not going to give you any more money. Is that show or is that real?
I think there's genuine anger about that. You know, Working Families is has a lot of labor support, a lot of community and green support. So we generally favor a view that says everybody deserves a decent chance in life and a decent amount of security, which is part of why the whole retirement security battle is so important. I think there is dismay about some of the new pension, real dismay about the new pension legislation. Because it won't actually save that much money in the near term, and it seems like it's a race to the bottom. We need to create a pension system in which private sector workers can get into play here. That's the real problem with pensions, is that they've been destroyed in the private economy, and therefore the public workers are losing the political argument. Why should they have something that others don't? So it's we need to reverse that. We have to say to ourselves, everybody deserves a dignified retirement, and make the necessary steps that make that possible.
So, Dan Cantor, tell us exactly what happened in the budget in terms of pension reform. I know that Cuomo asked for a great deal more than he got, but what did he get?
The short version is it will take, he raised the retirement age, went up a year, not a gigantic amount. But the big thing is the new creation of Tier 6, the new tier. So this affects only new employees. It's not retrospective, it's prospective. And those new employees will have to pay much more than current employees have to pay towards their own retirement. Now, people without a pension hearing this think, I even wish I had one. So that's a fair reaction. But, you know, these are things that, are normally bargained, and I think the union members and leaders are upset that it was essentially forced upon them, and they don't love it, that's for sure.
The Working Families Party has actually done pretty well in some of these elections. People don't want to vote for the Democrats, they don't want to vote for the Republicans, and so they vote on your line, the Working Families line. I want to know who you will be endorsing this year. Well, let me put it this way. The Democrats were in control of the Senate 2 years ago, and they were terrible. They messed up awfully. But some of their rhetoric is a more progressive rhetoric than that of either the Democrats, the regular Democrats like Andrew Cuomo, or the Republicans. So if you endorse them and they get back into office and they have the majority and they behave like they did the last time, what does that portend?
Yeah, that was not a shining moment for our friends in the Democratic Party. Listen, we obviously are in an informal alliance with the Democrats. That's who we tend to endorse almost always, just as the Conservative Party almost always endorses Republicans. And each of us tries to pull the major party where we're closest to in the direction we want them to go. We learned our lessons, I think, from the debacle, and we're being much tougher in our discussions with the prospective Democratic candidates for Senate against the Republican incumbents. But we live in the real world, and so we definitely want to help flip the Senate, but make it better as we go. So that's the challenge. It's a tough one because the redistricting decisions and so on have made the some of the districts pretty bizarre. But holding that aside, we still think there's a needle to be to thread here, and we can in fact do both of these. You know, we have to have we're a third party, right? So we're not one of the two major parties. We have to have confidence that our ideas will attract people. We talk to a lot of independent voters, right? That's a big chunk of our base. And if you look at the recent special election returns in Newburgh, in the assembly seat, or a couple up in Western New York, we got a bigger than expected vote, 11%, I think, in one district that produced the margin for the Democrat who won. That's a sign to us that our message of economic sanity, economic fairness, is a winning one, and we can attract disgruntled Democrats, disaffected independent voters, even the occasional Republican, working class Republican, who thinks, why am I supporting this guy who just votes against me all the time? I don't like those Democrats, but I do like what I'm hearing from working families, so I'll vote on their line. So you just keep at it. Politics is not a one-time event, right? You got to do it and do it again and do it again.
When you say that you're being much tougher than you were the last time, could you give us some specifics?
I don't want to name too many names, but in our discussions about who we would be willing to support, that's where the rubber meets the road. There are some people seeking the Democratic nomination who we won't support. So that's a challenge to the Democrats to deal with that. If you're against some core principles of ours, whether it's on public financing of elections or minimum wage or Employee Free Choice Act or bringing back manufacturing jobs, if you're not with us on those things, it would be silly for us to back someone like that. We're hoping that since we think these are not only good policy ideas but popular ideas, that we'll get candidates who in the end endorse them.
So when you take a look at somebody like Minority Leader John Sampson, he's obviously got to come to you and say, hey, we need your help here. Do you ever look at him and say, you know, Senator, you messed up so badly last time that we're going to expect a better leadership team than you had the last time? Can you do that kind of thing?
I don't think that's a fair recounting of what happened. It was not Sampson. He came in after the messing up happened and tried to salvage the situation, did the best he could. So it was not the problems occurred on the previous leader's watch, not his. That said, yeah, sure, we want to say to him, and we have said to him, here are the kinds of issues that we are most concerned with. We'd like you to find candidates who will stand with us. And he's pretty good on a lot of the stuff we care about. It's a tough, the Democrats always have a more difficult job than the Republicans, it seems. They're less united. They're more diverse. They're also trying to do things. Republicans, in some sense, this is not a novel view. You know, basically, they just like to say no. That's easier. It's easier to have discipline when you're just saying no all the time. So that's part of the inherent tension, and it's why it seems Republicans are disciplined and Democrats are not. Still, you know, you keep at it, and you find some good people in there, and they rise up, and you hope that you can show that the government can actually do things to improve people's lives. I mean, this is a lot of inside politics we're talking, but the real name of the game here is, what are they going to stand for? Are they going to support? Can we get enough senators to support Speaker Silver's minimum wage plus indexing bill? Can we finally establish public funding of public elections? You know, otherwise, it's corporate funding of public elections, so we might as well do it right. So on and so forth. Can we pass a hydrofracking ban? That's a very important one, and an issue that has generated an immense amount of heat and light.
We're talking to Dan Cantor, Executive Director of the Working Families Party, which bills itself as New York's progressive third party. Let me ask you this. What do you think about the job that Andrew Cuomo has been doing? What grade would you give him?
You know, I would say a grade. I don't know. He's obviously been very effective. We were unhappy with some stuff that happened early on, happy with some later stuff. We're glad that he moved the millionaire's tax at the end of the year, though we wish it had been more robust because all of a sudden there are all these needs one could have predicted, whether it's downstate mass transit or upstate economic development needs. We do need to have the wherewithal as a society to invest. You know, we were thrilled that he included a call for public financing of elections in his State of the State address. So, you know, we respect him, obviously, and we're very mindful of how popular and powerful he is. But in a democratic system, part of our job is to push for the values and ideals we have and try to persuade him to support some of them, if not all of them. We've made a lot of progress. It hasn't gotten much notice. He's done a great job on advancing the Green Jobs Program. I think this is going to end up being one of his signature accomplishments over the next few years, creating thousands of jobs as people's homes get retrofitted in a very novel and exciting way. So there's some good things there, and, you know, we'll push on the things where we disagree. And part of our task is to show him that there's a base out there for the best things that he supports that he doesn't right now see a path to victory on.
Now, there are some who say, look, he's in bed with Rupert Murdoch. His number one fan is a columnist for the New York Post who traditionally supports Republicans. He said he was going to give us a new redistricting plan and he was going to veto the self-serving plan, and that there are those who really think, in contrast to your views about flipping the Senate, that he saved them by not vetoing their bills and making it safe for them another time. And there are those who suspect that's what he wanted all along. I'm one of them. I'm sort of wondering how you react to all that.
There's a lot in there. I think on redistricting, he lost. The clock ran out, and I suppose from his point of view, the choice of vetoing was no longer viable. I've heard others disagree with that. You know, I think he also probably used the leverage there for things that he wanted. I mean, that's how politics actually happens. And it's not always pristine, but, you know, at least we solve problems without violence. That said, I do think, you know, we obviously want the governor to help us create a Democratic-working family Senate. That's an important piece. But mostly we want him to push forward on some of these issues that are so important to actually improving people's day-to-day lives. We have got to solve, the unemployment crisis is gigantic. You know, there's 1 million New Yorkers out of work. There's even more than that working for bad wages. You can't live on $350, $400 a week. And there's probably 1.4 million New Yorkers. That's their weekly wage. That's the kind of thing that we try to focus on, right? The third parties historically are about issues. If all we were interested in were candidates, we'd be in the major parties. But we're trying to advance a certain set of values, a certain set of issues, and we have, it turns out, there are hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who vote on the working families line, so it's clear there's an audience for a common-sense progressive agenda. The stronger we get, the more we'll be able to advance it. And the more we'll be able to push legislators, executives, and so on in a good direction.
Dan Cantor, do you really believe that there'll ever be campaign finance reform in New York State?
I actually do. I think the Citizens United decision has actually awakened a broader public to what's going on. I mean, the degradation of our democracy by this, you know, tidal wave of money is now penetrated. People understand this. It's not something that only specialists understand. It's corrupt, and I don't mean that individual legislators are corrupt, although there are some of those. We've seen a pretty high, you know, that famous line, the 99% reelection rate, 14% indictment rate. So there definitely have been some bad apples there. But it's corrupting of the whole system, and it's degrading for candidates and elected officials to have to beg for money, and it reduces citizens' willingness to believe the system isn't rigged. Right now, most voters believe the system is rigged, and they're not wrong. So this is now widely understood. We have a powerful, popular governor who has said he wants to see public funding of elections established in New York. We have a speaker who has been in support of this literally for decades, since he was the election law chair 20 years ago. So we think there's an opening here to put through the first concrete post-Citizens United program in America. This would be a great feather in the governor's cap and the speaker's cap and the majority leader's cap, although he won't believe it. So we're going to have to persuade the Republicans that this is actually good for everyone, and we can get off this ridiculous hamster wheel of, you know, chasing gigantic dollars from wealthy donors. It's going to take a huge amount of public education, but I believe there's an opening because of the Supreme Court's mind-boggling decisions these last few years.
Let's get real here. Why would the Republicans, Dean Skelos and his majority, ever, since they're getting so much money and since basically they are the party
right.
of the rich, why in the world would they agree to that?
Only if they felt that they would lose a key election or two. Most listeners may know that they have a very narrow majority. They need to hold on to every seat they have. So if there are a few seats around the state where Working Families and Citizen Action and other groups are pounding and making into an electoral issue that if you're not for public funding of public elections, you're for corruption. If that becomes something that voters vote on, that make their decisions on, then we have a chance, because the one thing that Republican leaders want, they may dislike this idea, but they want to stay in power even more. So if they think they will lose elections because of this, then we have a chance. So that's our task, is to make this a big enough, visible enough, manifest enough public issue in the public mind that even a Republican leader can read the writing on the wall. It's a heavy lift, I agree, but
heavy lift
is right. We do have a governor
right.
that has shown he can get very difficult things done.
If he wants to. But there are those.
This one, I think he does.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you're a Democrat, it's always good to have the masses pay for elections because the Democrats have more people as opposed to more money. So that's an easy one. But I'm worried about this. I've been teaching this stuff for years and mm-hmm. years, and I do this program, and I run the Legislative Gazette. And yet I go out on the street and I see somebody said, I like you on the radio. And I say, name your state legislators.
Nobody knows.
They can't do it.
Right.
So
that's
you're
right.
now talking about the sophistication of understanding a law, let alone who represents them.
I have a higher estimation of the average voter than you, Brother Chartok. I'm teasing. But in reality, you're correct that people usually don't know, but they do know. And if you've seen some of the work that Stan Greenberg, the well-known pollster, has put out, they do know that things are not working. And that they actually don't even hear what people like me say, because they think, you're just another reformer talking about whatever. It's just political talk, because they believe the system is rigged and corrupt. So if we can talk about that, we believe we can hit a nerve that will enable us to elevate this issue. We may be wrong, but that's what organizing is about. It's what politics is for.
When you talk to legislators and they want your support, how does it go?
Well, there are different kinds of legislators. There are many who went into public service for quite good reasons. There's 40-plus legislators, for example, who have recently signed a letter on the topic we've been talking, on public financing, to the speaker, affirming their support for his legislation on this. These are champions. These are people who went into public service because they'd actually like to use the power of government to make people's lives better. There are definitely others who are more, shall we say, careerist or opportunist, and for them it's a little bit more of a J-O-B. So you learn who is motivated by what, and you tend to focus on the champions because they're the ones with the energy to do the work that it takes to get things done in the legislature. It takes a lot of focus to move anything. Inertia is the natural state here, so trying to change things takes a relentless laser focus over time, not overnight. a mobilized citizenry, an educated, you know, editorial board class, and so on. And you know, sometimes you get it right. Often you don't.
Let's talk about hydrofracking for a moment as a case study. I find this whole thing appalling, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's clear that the president wants it. It's clear that the governor wants it. At least to me, it is.
Yep.
But I consider it to be extraordinarily dangerous.
Yeah, we agree with that. I think you're right. I think the president has taken the wrong position. And while the governor hasn't settled on his publicly, I think you're right. He leans in favor, and we're opposed. And we've told him so many times. I think it's a very tough issue at some level, right? Holding aside the danger question, right, you have this very appealing notion that in these upstate communities that are desperate for economic activity, this would be a good thing to do. But it's a devil's bargain. The jobs are temporary. There aren't that many of them. And, you know, the chemicals are forever here. So that's why we are so firm in wanting a ban. If you look what's happening just across the border in Pennsylvania, it's mind-blowing. People's water is, in fact, being contaminated. In some towns, people are getting sick. They have to truck in water to this little town called Dimmock that everybody has heard, many people have heard about. So we have to do better, right? We can't just go the path of least resistance here. And because some gas drillers from Oklahoma or Texas want to come in and say we're all going to get rich, they're wrong. They're lying, and this is a bad idea. And natural gas isn't such, you know, it's like we need to move away from a fossil fuel economy. We might as well start now and figure it out. This is going to take immense leadership from our elected officials, from the renewable energy business crowd, from labor and so on. But if we don't start down this path in a serious way, we will regret it, and so will everybody who lives after us.
If the legislature is as scared of the governor as I think they are politically, will he have his way with this?
I don't think so. I think the governor is watching carefully the level of public sentiment on this. It's overwhelmingly against. There were 60,000-plus comments submitted by individual people in the recent Department of Environmental Conservation process. So this has slowed down any rush to hydrofracking. We think it should be banned, but it's good it's been slowed down. It's much more in the governor's court now than the legislature's. But obviously the legislature has a role to play here as well. It's hard to imagine getting a ban passed through the Senate for the same reasons you were talking about before. They get a ton of money from these gas drillers who, parenthetically, are now, the third largest source of campaign contributions is the drilling industry. It's kind of shocking. Out of nowhere, they just showed up. So, and we don't think it's because they're, you know, just boosters of public civic education in New York. So I think we've got a decent shot. Town after town is passing rules to ban it. I think there'll be a big political cost to the governor if he pushes it forward. So we're hoping that, you know, he's looking at the emerging science on this. You know, today there's a story about an enormous number of small earthquakes caused by this. One of these days this is, you know, not going to be so small, right? Something will happen that's very unwelcome. So I feel like we have momentum, but the other side, as you are pointing out, has a lot of dough, you know, That's a tough fight. That's another reason why we need public funding of elections. It would change things. Something like this would never even emerge. I don't know if you're following Pennsylvania. They're now passing laws saying doctors are not allowed to discuss the effects of fracking with their patients. I mean, it's shocking what they're doing there. So that won't happen here. The governor is on record saying if we do fracking, it'll be highly regulated. But we think that's the wrong framework. We should figure out a different energy path to be on. And this should be not allowed here in New York State.
Well, you get the last word. Our guest has been Dan Cantor, Executive Director of the Working Families Party. Dan, always a joy to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.